Well, in her new book, Anne Hagedorn stipulates that private military and security contractors these days have simply become an indispensable part of America's military force, so indispensable that they actually radically outnumbered traditional troops in Iraq and Afghanistan between 2009 and 2011. Anne Hagedorn's book is The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. She's a former staff writer for The Wall Street Journal. Among her books are Wild Ride, Ransom, Beyond the River, and Savage Peace. She speaks at the library tonight. And Anne Hagedorn, so good to have you. Welcome to Up to Date.
Great to be here, Steve.
Well, this idea that private contractors have the prominence that they do in our military is going to surprise a lot of people. When did this surge in private contracting begin?
Well, the surge actually began in what is often referred to as the First Contractors War, mm-hmm. which was the following the invasion in 2003 in Iraq. And that would be a bonanza of U.S. contracts at that time. And that's what gave a lot of companies their starts. There are a couple you've probably heard of that began in March of 2003 and have developed tremendously to the point where they have $1 billion worth of contracts now.
Why was there a market for companies, private companies, going to war in 2003? Why wasn't our military big enough to handle it?
Well, because of a controversy actually over the size or the need of the military for the aftermath of the invasion. And there was a big disagreement.
Our military wasn't big enough, you're saying.
Well, yeah, there was a disagreement about how many troops would be necessary for the occupation. And the military kept saying, you know, we need 200,000, 300,000, and I think 250 was the final number. But the range from 200 to 400,000, and the government was saying, certain people in the government were saying that we just need 75,000. Hmm. And so that gap, a combination of that and some policies that changes that were made in the in what are called orders 1 and 2 that basically eliminated the Saddam Hussein's security forces and mm-hmm. created vast recruitment possibilities for the insurgency. So the insurgency was much bigger than what was anticipated, and our troop level was much smaller. But this industry, these companies had been slowly growing for a long time. I mean, we've had mercenaries in the world. They, as one of my sources says in the book, the mercenary seed is always there. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had mercenaries in the world always, ever since.
But there's a difference between mercenaries and private contractors, which is what?
Yeah, since I've been on the road for the book, I realize one of the misconceptions is that everyone calls these companies mercenaries. And actually, you can define them as modern mercenaries. But the image is still locked into what I call the mercenary renaissance of the second half of the 20th century, which is the image of sort of unsavory characters in post-colonial, neo-colonial conflicts, largely in Africa. That's our image of what a mercenary is. And so to call these companies mercenaries, I think it's probably erroneous. They're more like they are brokers for mercenaries, because basically they offer armed and unarmed services. But, you know, the fundamental difference is the critical factor is that these are modern business corporate forms. Mm-hmm. And so they trade and compete internationally. They're linked to financial holdings. They recruit.
Yeah.
They have board meetings. They have shareholders. they are companies. And they broker mercenaries, you know, and they have layers of subcontractors for every contract. But what you have to realize is the vast expanse, and what I try to show, what I hope I show in the book, through showing the evolution, the corporate evolution of the mercenary trade, is how this is a bona fide industry mm-hmm. with markets not just in the United States.
And around the world. This industry has become then how large? How dominant of a factor is it when it comes to America's military force today?
Well, that's a question that is somewhat difficult to answer, and it's a very interesting question because it really speaks to the vastness of the industry and the difficulty of completely defining it. Because mm-hmm. what you have is companies that have subsidiaries that deal with, you know, armed services, armed guards, who work for might work for the shipping industry. Maritime security is very big right now, for the UN, for humanitarian aid organizations, but all kinds of armed security as in hostile environments where there is development in this era of globalization. So you've got this international industry hire subcontracting, working sometimes for governments, sometimes for multinationals, and changing with circumstances. And so they may add subsidiaries or they may add a layer of subcontractors to fulfill the need of a particular market at a particular time. So to embrace that and put numbers on it is not easy in this country or internationally. And the trick, the difficulty, I think, here is that there are so many agencies that use them. And it's not just DOD, Department of Defense.
There's no question, though, as you point out in the book, that this part of our military has become absolutely indispensable.
That's true. And it's military. I just find it fascinating. I find it fascinating because the key words in this topic are privatization, contractors, accountability, transparency. Those words sound very dull. And yet this is a fascinating military and business story. And I'm not saying that because I'm promoting a book or mm-hmm. on the road for a book. I'm saying it because I am utterly fascinated. It never ceases to amaze me how adaptable the industry is, and how dependent we are on these companies. How we've become so dependent, and that still they are not the government is still not transparent. They have not given us the full picture.
Those lines, you're speaking in Missouri here. Our Senator Claire McCaskill in the last couple of years has made this idea of watchdogging contracting writ large in a much closer way. She's headed up a commission that's taken a look at, contracting and how utterly out of control it is, the waste of money. I think there's a figure I have in my notes here. This report concluded that $60 billion was lost to fraud and waste. She's talking a lot about military operations overseas here. What about that? How loose is the oversight of this industry on behalf of the federal government here?
Well, in the book, I show all the efforts on the part of Congress, and she's been wonderful. There are a group of congressmen and women who have just been really on this from the very beginning. And many of the bills, all the bills that have been proposed have not passed. To tighten the oversight, there have been changes in some laws to improve oversight. But at this point in time, as we're looking at the possibility of new contingency operations, then if we called Iraq the first contractor's war, then we are looking at the possibility of the second contractor's war. And so the big question is, have we done our homework? Are we ready for that? Because if you look at some of the great studies that have come out of Congress, congressional mm-hmm. commissions, since actually the Nisr Square incident in Baghdad involving the 17 civilians who were killed and Blackwater employees. The jury is in deliberation right now. But if you look at the efforts since 2007, since that event, the big question, like I said, is are we ready? And if you look at some of the efforts by McCaskill mm-hmm. and others in Congress, I think they would say, no, we're really not ready to face another contingency operation in a position of being dependent on these companies. And you know, the issue is transparency. You need to know, and she and others have brought out the issue that if citizens of a democracy don't know the impact of war, the total impact of war. I mean, when we are told the casualty totals when we were in Iraq or Afghanistan, are we told the contractor casualty totals? I mean, between, I think it's March 2009 and June 2011, the contractor casualties exceeded traditional troops. And also...
Well, people don't know that, and they don't know that in the past few years that in Afghanistan and Iraq that contractors outnumber traditional troops by 10 to 1.
Yeah.
There's no broad sense of that out amongst our citizens. And the consequence of that is what?
Well, the consequence, I think, is really... we could talk about that for hours because really it boils down to one word, which is democracy, citizens' rights to know. But it also boils down to another single word, which is indifference. I mean, indifference, looking the other way and not knowing the full impact of war and not being aware of it. And not being involved in the defense and security of your nation creates a bigger threat to our security than anything, which is indifference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, looking the other way, saying, okay, let other people do our dirty work. We can't do that. We're not supposed to do that.
And all this stems from this notion, and you point this out in the book, this notion that, you know, America's hasn't been willing to reinstate the draft. Our military is of a certain size. It can't grow much bigger because of those constraints. And this is the result. We have to go out and get it privately because we can't get it organically internally.
That's true. And that is one of the reasons, depending on private military and security companies allows policymakers to work under the radar of public scrutiny. Part of the solution here would be transparency. I mean, why not let the American public know? It would be, I'm sure the industry would love that because the public companies would get more investors. But mm-hmm. if it's part of our system, and there are people, you know, who, if you look throughout history, who say that we are in the midst of a tectonic shift that is of the level of the 17th century when we moved into the sovereignty of states, nation states. Now we're in this era of borderless business environment. We're entering the era of the fading of the nation state. That's mm-hmm. one theory. And this is what many people say is one of the signs of it. And so if that's true, then why not make it transparent? Why not have a regulatory commission? Why not announce the involvement, the role? So if we go into another contingency operation, the role of private contractors, you know, what is the role? And let the American public know.
Let's let our listeners in on this, too. I'm interested in their reactions to this sort of this new focus on private contractors inside our military. What do you make of it? What are your concerns about it? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. And I should point out that Ann Hagedorn speaks about her new book, The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security, at 6:30 this evening at the Central Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. That's at 14 West 10th Street. To grab a seat, go to kclibrary.org. Ann, how did you get started on this topic? You've been in different topics in your career. How did you get to contracting within the military?
Well, actually, I was Every great project, I was here in the 2008 as the writer in residence at the Kansas City Public Library. I did a four-part series, Country of Writing, and then did consulting with local writers. And one of the things I taught was that every great story begins with a question and curiosity, and it drives you. And you can't allow you have to keep an open mind. You can't allow the actual initial question to shape the entire project. My question was, to what degree had we become dependent on these companies? How big was there really an industry? What was beyond Blackwater? What was beyond the headlines?
I was going to say, why were you even asking those questions? What got you thinking about this stuff?
Well, the very origin of this.
That's what I'm searching for here, Ann.
Yeah, I know. But the real origin is in the mid-1990s with my second book. Mm-hmm. Because in my second book, which was the surge in international kidnappings at the end of the Cold War,
you're thinking about updating. Now.
I am, yes. Mm-hmm. But for the research in that book, I found all of these displaced workers, basically. I mean, it was fascinating because at the end of the Cold War, and this is true throughout history, when there are military drawdowns, and every time you hear about the military being shrinking or the traditional military getting smaller, then these companies have more recruits, and they typically grow. Throughout history, that's the way it's been. And so at the end of the Cold War, there were more companies forming. And I bumped into that because I discovered private firms doing private kidnap negotiations. Mm. And I was fascinated by it. I knew there was a larger story unfolding, but I couldn't go back to it for a while. Fast forward 10 years, two more books, and then it had developed into a bona fide industry, this privatization of sort of inherently governmental functions, and I was fascinated by it. And I just asked the question, how far had it gone, and what were the companies, what were they doing? And the more I got into it, I thought, I owe it to the general reader to keep going and tell the full story, from the end of the Second World War into the age of drones. But I found a quote when I was waiting to be on the show. I found a quote in the book that I think sort of explains a lot.
Mm-hmm. The quote is?
Do you allow that?
Okay. Yeah.
We're having a good time here. Anyhow, this is from a former British Army officer who I sort of asked some of the same questions, when I was doing my interviews. And I did a lot of reporting in London, and he said the private military and security companies will evolve into multinational and multifunctional firms so that governments and corporations will go to them as single servers and get used to relying on them. Then they'll succeed more and more, and what seems hidden now will simply be integrated so that future generations won't know the difference. Traditional militaries will become smaller, and the industry will continue to grow. Mm. So in answer to your question, one of the things that fascinated me was how can I tell this story, bring together all of the put a human face on the evolution of this industry and do it really before it slips into the fabric so much that we generations following us won't know the difference. And so that's the answer.
We're talking about the privatization of our military with Ann Hagedorn, her new book, The Invisible Soldiers. She speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Central Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. To grab a seat, kclibrary.org. Lots of phone calls here. In fact, a full board of calls.
Oh,
let's go to Elaine from Kansas City, Missouri. Elaine, you're on the show. Welcome.
Hi. Actually, the speaker hasn't said anything new to me this morning because I really pay attention to the news. I don't watch faux news. And the issue I really want her to address is the profit margins that these new companies are making, because it's enormous. In fact, this morning, based on all that's going on in the world, I'm thinking maybe I should buy Halliburton.
Yeah.
Profit margins, Ann, what about it? How much are they making?
That's really an excellent question, and it's one of those that's relatively difficult to answer. There's one study that I found that showed 43 out of 580 companies, I think, that are public companies. So the fact that so many of these are private companies, it's hard to completely track the profit margins. The growth of the industry, the range of the industry in total, armed and unarmed, Armed Services is somewhere in the range of probably about $60 billion to $250 billion. And the increase in markets or the increase in profits has been the numbers that I've been given have been between 8 and 15% annually.
8 and 15% profit margins?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you talk to, as you'll see in the book, I spent a lot of time with industry insiders, and especially at the trade organization, trade association, representing them, which used to be called the International Peace Operations Association, but recently changed its name, but the they will give different profit margins than some other organizations, but nobody can establish those figures.
Anecdotally, are you hearing anything different than 8 to 15%?
I am nervous about quite frankly, Elaine, giving out any numbers like that because, first of all, it changes constantly. It is growing. And it shifts, and the industry, and no study that can establish that, really, especially with the layers of subcontractors. But you're right. I mean, a couple people have said to me on the road, are you investing in these companies? Because quite frankly, if they become part of the fabric, as they have, they are profitable. But then you have to realize that in Iraq and Afghanistan, although they some of those companies got big contracts after we leave, they don't leave. And so, but at the same time, there was a slip in the market for a while. But then you look at the UN, and since 2009, I think the UN's budget for these companies for private security has increased by 300%.
Wow.
So, you know, and the shipping industry, look at the shipping industry. If you want to see an increase in business, I mean, it's dramatic. Maritime security is quite big right now. It was controversial for a long time. Very interesting story in and of itself. But at any rate, so, you know, I would love to know a perfect answer for you, Elaine.
Yeah. Elaine, thanks for the call. Let's go to Matt from Baldwin City. Our topic, the privatization of our military. Matt, good morning.
Good morning. To what extent does this phenomenon represent a transfer of wealth from the public sector, the arena of what we pay in taxes and the public good, to private interests and, you know, of whatever political stripe they may be?
That's interesting.
Well, that's a really good question.
It is.
And it's to what extent I can't answer that, but I can say that the question is excellent and it's obviously an issue that that we have to look at. I mean, it's part of the theme here. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's part of the total framework. And actually, we could talk about that for about a half an hour.
Yeah.
But I can't specifically answer that in the time frame right now. Can we call back and have an afternoon show?
Yeah, maybe
Steve?
We should do that. Matt, thank you.
I'm sorry.
Rita from Chillicothe. Yeah. Rita, good morning.
Excellent, timely topic. Thank you so much. My observation from a high school classmate who was a West Point grad is that contractors it is a transfer of wealth, that they're making much more than our active and reserve military do. He topped out and wasn't going to promote any further after his 20 years in, so within a week of his retirement, his mother said he went to work for a contractor for double his previous salary. At the same time, I know my son, who's active duty, his wife qualified for the Women, Infants, and Children Nutrition Supplement during her pregnancies.
Huh. Well, now that's true. Absolutely all true. And the other way of looking at it is that, you know, one out of 10 returning soldiers gets work with one of these companies. But this is where it gets complicated. It's not a black and white situation, because it's good that they're getting jobs, and there are good companies, and there are companies, I mean, they're trying to do good in terms of what they have contracted to do and the services that they provide. And so there are fulfilling careers in these companies. It's just like the British Army officer said in that quote, you know, it's something that's slipping into the fabric. Where it gets complicated in terms of the transfer of wealth is that the companies, remember, are focusing on the bottom line. And some, as you'll see in the book, there was actually a congressional, some people in Congress, have McCaskill being one of them, have been really on this. There was in 2011, I think it was, the a congressional commission or a congressional hearing about the exploitation of private contractors. Because remember, like I said, bottom line, follow the money, and you have companies subcontracting, and some of those subcontractors come out of third world nations. And they're paid little, and they sometimes their working conditions are not good. Mm-hmm. And so it's a it's fascinating and complicated.
Yeah. Rita, thank you for the call. Give us a sense, Anne, what kinds of jobs do these contractors perform? What's the range of duties that we're talking about, so us lay people can understand what this is?
Well, like I said, there are armed and unarmed services.
Meaning?
And, yeah. And in the armed category, in the, let's go to the unarmed first. I mean, we have logistics services, air transport, intelligence analysis, drone operations, drone maintenance. Weapons procurement, weapons maintenance, a vast range. I mean, usually, typically we think of logistics services, logistics support because of Halliburton in Iraq, but it's more, you know, obviously. And in the armed security, like I said, we have a large portion of our embassies, you know, are now diplomats that's another market for these companies. So we have it in Homeland Security and the CIA and NSA, obviously, and the State Department. There's a shift from military missions, and it's a fascinating. That's one of the most fascinating parts of this industry, I think, is the shift from military missions to security and stability operations.
Right.
And that's been happening throughout the since about 2005, 2006, and as we move into, hopefully, as we move into a more non-intervention era,
yeah,
or non-intervention strategy, the work for these companies for the armed security, and so it will only increase. And so the armed security is a portion of these services, which have a vast. There's a vast array within the arena of defense and security.
Do other countries around the globe rely on private contractors for their military anywhere close to the way we do?
Yes, yes. The United Kingdom. Other countries are developing this industry. China, France, Russia. You know, Israel, there are private contracting companies. I mean, there are private military and security companies all over the globe and developing, definitely.
Yeah. We're going to have to leave our conversation there. Again, Anne Hagedorn's new book, The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. Again, she speaks this evening at 6:30 at the Central Branch of the Kansas City Public Library, 14 West 10th Street. To grab a seat, to get more information, just go to kclibrary.org. And what a fascinating topic. I'm glad you
brought it
to light, Anne. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve. This was fun.
That's author Anne Hagedorn. You can find all of our broadcasts. Just go to kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR. Up to date, follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow on the show, one of my personal favorites, jazz legend Wynton Marsalis, is with us, plus the role of female spies in the Civil War, a fascinating tale. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Eliza Spertus. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.